welcome to This Upbeat Life, the show where we take a light-hearted look at life, what makes us tick, and explore what makes people happy. I'm Simon JJ Green, and I'll be interviewing ordinary people from all walks of life, as well as looking at the latest in wellness, health science, nature, and the quirkier side of the health and well-being industry. Now, please remember that the information and opinions shared on this podcast are for general knowledge and informational purposes only, and do not constitute medical advice. Now, let's get on with today's episode. Hello and welcome to episode 9 of This Upbeat Life. I'm so glad you could join me today on what is probably the hottest day of the year so far. I'm just outside London, it's 32 degrees centigrade and it's only June. So all these worldwide governments seem to have their heads up their backsides when it comes to climate change. Let's go and sort this out. Now, on quick news today, edible pond slime. Is this the next superfood? On The Real Deal, a serious look at the invisible poison gases in babies' crib mattresses. And so this segment will be slightly longer than usual. And in far-out stuff, Borgs. On quick news, move over kale, spinach and Brussels sprouts. There's a new superfood in town, and it's basically pond slime. Great news for anyone who's ever looked at the green scum on a lake and thought, I'd really like to eat that. Boffins at the University of Birmingham have discovered that Chlorella vulgaris, a type of freshwater microalgae, is packed with protein, lipids, carbohydrates, vitamins and minerals. Yes, you know, the same kind of gunk that you'd normally power wash off your driveway could soon be part of your morning smoothie. Previous research has found that Chlorella vulgaris cells contain almost 50% protein, along with a healthy supply of fats, carbohydrates and various vitamins and minerals. Now, on the upside, unlike traditional farming, which demands huge amounts of land, water and backbreaking labour, this little green powerhouse can be grown sustainably with a teeny tiny environmental footprint. In other words, while your neighbour is out there sweating over their vegetable garden, a bit like today, you could be cultivating a nutritious superfood in an old fish tank. But wait, there's more. Chlorella has antioxidant properties, supports the immune system, and even helps detoxify the body. It's already available in powder and tablet form for those brave enough to try it. And because I'm a dedicated podcaster, or just slightly bonkers, I gave it a go, so you don't have to. And the verdict? Well, ever wanted to know what drinking a smoothie filled with lawnmower clippings tastes like? No, you don't. I can tell you it's an acquired taste, let's put it that way. But hey, if people can convince themselves that wheatgrass and lentil chips are delicious, maybe pond scum will have its day too. Bon appetit. And on The Real Deal, invisible poisons that could harm your child as they sleep. Now, normally on The Real Deal, I'd be taking a light-hearted look at some health topic that's caught my eye. But today's topic is a bit more serious. Today I'm looking at a pressing concern for parents, caregivers and policymakers alike. The silent threat posed by toxic chemicals off-gassing from crib mattresses. Now, recent research has illuminated a hidden risk that may shape a child's health for years to come. Now, while doing the research for this article, I came across some very big words quite complicated chemical words that I may stumble across, so apologies for that in advance. Now, we all know that sleep is vital for healthy brain development in infants and young children. While they sleep, neural connections form, hormones regulate growth, and the body recharges. But it seems that few people have considered that the very surface upon which babies sleep could be compromising their health. Across North America and beyond, a team of researchers from the University of Toronto has uncovered alarming evidence. Many crib mattresses are releasing a cocktail of potentially harmful toxins directly into the air that children breathe during their sleep and rest periods. In April 2025, the journal Environmental Science and Technology published a two-part study led by environmental chemist Professor Miriam Diamond. Her team conducted a comprehensive air sampling survey in 25 children's bedrooms in Canada, homes where infants and toddlers between 6 months and 4 years of age slept. Over the course of several weeks, the researchers employed high-sensitivity air monitors placed near the children's beds. These devices recorded concentrations of over two dozen chemicals, including phthalates, organophosphate ester flame retardants, and ultraviolet filter compounds. Subsequently, a companion study involved the purchase and laboratory testing of 16 new children's mattresses readily available at retail outlets. By simulating a child's body heat and weight, approximately 37 degrees Celsius surface temperature, and roughly 12 to 15 kilograms of pressure, the team quantified how much each mattress off-gassed when occupied. Now, if you're wondering what exactly is off-gassing, it's the release of gases, often volatile organic compounds or VOCs, from materials like new furniture, carpets or building materials. These gases are trapped during manufacturing process and can be released into the air, potentially impacting indoor air quality. You'll know what that smells like if you ever bought a new carpet, for example. Now, senior author Miriam Diamond explained, "We measured chemicals in the air of 25 children's bedrooms and found worrisome levels of more than two dozen phthalates, flame retardants, and UV filters. Importantly, warmer and weighted conditions, much like when a child is actually sleeping, substantially increased emissions at the mattress surface." Now, this is taken from Environmental Science and Technology, April 2025. I do apologise for the following technical jargon, but I think it's important for those who may wish to do their own research on this topic. So researchers have detected three main classes of compounds that were released. First were the phthalates. That's spelled P-H-T-H-A-L-A-T-E-S, which are used primarily as plasticizers to help make flexible plastic covers and foam padding more pliable. Some common phthalates were identified with several others that are already restricted in children's toys, but not in mattresses. In some tested mattresses, phthalate concentrations at the surface were high enough to exceed limits imposed on products intended for infants and toddlers. Now, the second compound identified were flame retardants, which are known as organophosphate esters and brominated compounds. Manufacturers add these chemicals to meet flammability standards. However, evidence suggests many flame retardants offer little or no real fire safety benefit in mattresses, particularly when compared to natural alternatives such as wool or latex. One mattress tested contained an organophosphate flame retardant level as high as 1,700 parts per million. This is concentration that can be cancer-causing. Some of the mattresses contain compounds like polybrominated diphenyl ether. It's not easy to say. And despite these having been banned in children's products in both Canada and the United States for nearly a decade. Now, most mattresses contain UV filters. These additives help to preserve the bright colours from fading under sunlight, yet they have begun to raise concerns for their potential endocrine-disrupting properties. UV filters identified included benzophenone 3 and similar cinnamate compounds, which are substances also found in sunscreens and cosmetics. Now, research has confirmed that these semi-volatile organic compounds evaporate or off-gas gradually over the mattress's lifespan. Contributing factors such as ambient room temperature, the child's body heat, and the weight of a sleeping infant caused emission rates to climb by several times compared to an unoccupied mattress. This is described by Jane Houlihan of Healthy Babies Bright Futures. So, should parents be alarmed? Well, yes, because infants and toddlers differ from adults in three key ways. Firstly, physiological vulnerability. Their organs and immune systems are immature, making them more susceptible to toxic insults. For example, a small hormonal disruption in infancy can cascade into learning disabilities, behavioural problems, and even chronic metabolic disorders later in life. Secondly, higher exposure rates. Due to hand-to-mouth behaviour, toddlers put toys, bedding, and other objects in their mouths all the time. Combined with breathing rates that can be up to 10 times higher per unit of body weight compared to adults, their cumulative chemical intake can be significantly greater. And lastly, skin permeability and surface area. A young child's skin absorbs chemicals more readily, and having three times the skin surface area relative to body weight increases the opportunity for dermal uptake, especially when lying directly against a mattress. Now, according to the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences, phthalates have been linked to reproductive abnormalities, undescended testes, lower sperm counts in later life, and early puberty in girls. They have also been associated with asthma, obesity, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, which is ADHD, and cardiovascular issues and certain cancers. Over at the Green Science Policy Institute, Dr. Arlene Blum says flame retardants, particularly the organophosphate esters and one called PBDE, carry a known risk of neurodevelopmental harm. A landmark study in 2020 estimated that PBDE exposure from household items contributed to a loss of about 162 million IQ points globally and over 738,000 cases of intellectual disability between 2001 and 2016. Even replacements for PBDEs, such as TCPP and TDCPP, are now under scrutiny for their carcinogenic and hormone-disrupting properties. I will try and find out what TCPP and TDCPP is a bit later on. Now, to provide context, I'll quote these three experts in the field. Firstly, Professor Miriam Diamond from the University of Toronto says, "Our study revealed that children's mattresses are often overlooked as a significant source of chemical exposure. Even a warm, weighted surface created simply by a child sleeping caused dramatic increases in off-gassing. This fact is not considered in current safety standards. We believe that manufacturers must update their testing protocols to reflect real-world use conditions." Then I have Dr. Arlene Blum, who's the Executive Director at Green Science Policy Institute. She says, "Flame retardants in children's products should be a thing of the past. We know that they do more harm than good. Numerous studies, including our own, demonstrates that these chemicals have no proven benefit in preventing mattresses fires." And then Dr. Arlene Blum, Executive Director at Green Science Policy Institute. "Flame retardants in children's products should be a thing of the past. We know they do more harm than good. Numerous studies, including our own, demonstrate that these chemicals have no proven benefit in preventing mattress fires. And yet parents remain in the dark about what is in the bed under their child." And then Jane Houlihan, who's the Research Director for Healthy Babies, Bright Futures, says, "This research is an urgent wake-up call. Families deserve transparency. They should be able to trust that products labelled as safe truly protect their children from harm. Until then, parents cannot rely solely on price, brand, or country of origin to ensure safety." So, what practical steps can parents take to reduce their children's exposure to mattress-related toxins? So, firstly, air out any new products, especially ones that you're not sure of their manufacturing origin. For example, after it's been bought, place any new crib mattresses outside in a shaded area away from direct sunlight for at least 2 to 3 weeks. This process allows volatile compounds to dissipate before the child sleeps on the surface. Secondly, you can use protective barriers. For example, a tightly fitted cotton or bamboo mattress cover can serve as an effective barrier. Clean sheets and sleep clothing absorb emitted chemicals, preventing them from reaching the child's skin or being inhaled directly. Wash bedding and pyjamas frequently, and ideally once a week, to remove accumulated residues. And there are other things that parents and caregivers can do, such as minimise extras inside the crib. So, for example, stuffed animals, extra padding, decorative pillows. These can harbour additional chemicals. A simple, uncluttered sleeping environment reduces total exposure. The crux of the issue is that any additional textile or soft furnishing within the crib could contain its own chemical additives as well as those that are potentially on the mattress. You can also select natural or certified mattresses. Opt for mattresses made from organic or naturally flame-resistant materials, such as GOTS certified cotton or GOLS certified organic latex, or 100% untreated wool. While these options may be costlier, they eliminate much of the risk associated with synthetic materials and unnecessary flame retardants. They can make a preference for goods that meet British standards and transparency in manufacturing components. As an example, in the United Kingdom, mattresses meeting BS1877, BS7177, and BSEN16890, these mattresses have passed rigorous safety and quality tests. Look for labels that say TCCP free. TCCP is a flame retardant. And then seek out brands that publicly disclose all raw materials and can provide laboratory certificates showing compliance with chemical content regulations. It should also be noted that the scientists' studies and findings underscore significant regulatory disparities. So, for example, in Canada, Health Canada bans certain flame retardants and phthalates in children's toys and sleepwear, but no federal limits exist for these compounds in mattresses. The researchers discovered that many tested mattresses contained plasticizers and flame retardants exceeding allowed thresholds for other children's products. In the United States, the Consumer Product Safety Commission published a report in 2017 recommending restrictions on organophosphate esters. Yet, as of June 2025, no nationwide mandate limits these chemicals' use in mattresses. California's Proposition 65 offers additional state-level warnings for products containing specific carcinogens, but manufacturer compliance varies. Now, over in the United Kingdom and European Union, in Europe, REACH regulations, that's the registration, evaluation, authorization, and restriction of chemicals, govern the use of priority substances. Certain high-concern phthalates, such as DEHP, DBP, and BBP, are already restricted. Nonetheless, other phthalate compounds, organophosphate esters, for example, and UV filters, remain largely unregulated in mattresses. Moreover, the EN16777 standard allows wool or cotton to be used instead of chemical flame retardants, but market uptake of these safer alternatives remains limited. Now, organizations like the Green Science Policy Institute and Healthy Babies Bright Futures are advocating for extending current phthalate restrictions, this is applicable to toys, to include bedding and mattress components. They also advocate prohibiting classes of organophosphate flame retardants in children's products entirely and developing real-world testing protocols, accounting for a child's body heat and pressure to ensure safety assessments reflect actual usage conditions. However, despite these concerns, there is reason for optimism. Several small manufacturers in Europe now produce chemical-free crib mattresses using organic latex and untreated wool. Advocacy groups are petitioning government agencies to implement stricter chemical use policies. And as parents become more educated, market demand for safer alternatives is on the rise. So, looking ahead, what does the future hold? Based on the University of Toronto study and related research, the following developments could emerge. Stricter labelling requirements. Governments may mandate detailed ingredient lists on mattress packaging, similar to requirements for food and cosmetics, so consumers can verify the absence of high-risk chemicals. They could advocate new testing protocols. Regulatory bodies could revise flammability testing standards to discourage chemical flame retardants, promoting naturally fire-resistant materials like wool or treated cotton. And then they can advocate for expanded chemical bans, extending the bans on specific phthalates and organophosphate flame retardants from children's toys and sleepwear to include all children's bedding and mattress components. So, the conclusion, I've talked about how chemicals meant to improve pliability or prevent fires in crib mattresses may instead harm the developing brain and body. Now, the key points are, one, it's an invisible threat. Semi-volatile organic compounds such as phthalates, flame retardants, and UV filters can off-gas from mattresses, especially under the warmth and weight of a sleeping child. Health risks. Early life exposure to these compounds has been linked to reproductive problems, neurodevelopmental delays, hormonal disruptions, asthma, obesity, and even cancer. Actionable steps. Air out new baby products before use. Use protective, tightly fitted barriers and wash bedding frequently. Minimize excess items in the crib. And choose mattresses made from organic or naturally fire-resistant materials. And then you can verify compliance with recognized safety standards and look for manufacturers who disclose all raw materials. Now, the policy implications are that without robust regulations targeting mattress-derived chemicals, families will continue to face uncertainty. Advocating for stronger, consistent standards across Canada, United States, and Europe remains essential. Now, I'm not a scientist or a doctor, so I urge you to do your own research if this subject affects you in any way. Now, if you found this episode helpful, please subscribe and share with fellow parents, caregivers, and anyone invested in childhood health. And that is it for that topic. And on Far Out Stuff today, Borgs. Now today I'm going to be your guide through the strange bazaar of 21st century living, or how Gen Z, I refuse to say Gen Z, or how Gen Z reinvented bad decisions. And today, oh today, we are diving into the technicolor chaos that is the Blackout Rage Gallons, or as cool kids call it, Borg. Yes, Borgs. And I don't mean the slightly relatable half-cyborg collective from Star Trek. Though to be fair, after drinking one of these concoctions, assimilation might seem like a reasonable life choice.
Red alert! All hands to battle stations!
As teenagers have to deal with ever more spiralling student debt, and the disappointing thought that they will still be living with their parents when they're in their 40s, they have had to find their happiness elsewhere. Now let's start with the basics. A blackout rage gallon is quite literally a gallon jug, very typical in the United States, but for those of us in the rest of the world using the metric system, a gallon is about 3.7 litres. So the gallon jug is the sort of thing you might put water in to water your sad dying ficus. These jugs are filled with homemade cocktail of alcohol, water, caffeinated flavour enhancers and electrolytes. A sort of a hydrating death potion or wellness drink if it were developed by pirates. So started around 2018 and then adopted by Gen Z in the 20s, this peculiar potion has taken universities and American college campuses by storm, and I mean that quite literally. Frat houses are awash in luminous liquids that look like windshield wiper fluid and taste like a lawsuit waiting to happen. According to Wikipedia, and I quote, "A Borg's high alcohol content and convenient packaging facilitates binge drinking, with a typical recipe calling for a fifth of vodka, equivalent to about 16 drinks. Bloody hell, 16 drinks. Now, the drink has been touted as a hangover remedy. Hang on a minute. Hangover remedy? And a harm reduction strategy, supposedly counteracting the effects of alcohol with water and electrolytes. But these claims are not grounded in any scientific evidence, none whatsoever. I guess the Borg's primary appeal is its DIY nature. I mean, you make it yourself. Because what could possibly go wrong when a 19-year-old chemistry major attempts to invent their own sports drink, but with vodka? Now, just in case you're not sure how it's made, firstly, make sure you're at least 21 or 18 in the UK. You take one empty gallon jug, preferably from a petrol station or a haunted garage, fill it halfway with water, so far so good, add a healthy splash of vodka, and by healthy we mean you should update your will, a caffeine-laced flavour enhancer like Mio or Liquid IV, and voila, you have yourself a Borg. But hold your horses, partner. Here's where it gets a little theatrical. Each Borg must have a pun name, and I stress must. This is a rite of passage, more sacred than naming a child. Examples include, but not limited to, and I don't apologise for any of this, Borgen Freeman, SpongeBorg Square Drink, Ruth Bader Ginsburg,
the Borginator,
Borganic Chemistry,
Borgen Donor,
Captain Borgen,
Borgerita,
Borgius? And my personal favourite, the Borg Father. Now, some defenders of the Borg argue, quite seriously mind you, that it's a safer way to drink, because you're controlling the ingredients. There are electrolytes, there's hydration, it's practically a detox. You see, it's not a binge drinking device, it's a wellness ritual. It's like calling a chainsaw an aggressive back scratcher. Now, proponents say it helps people avoid drink spiking at parties, which is fair and noble. But let's be honest, anyone drinking from a gallon jug marked Borgasm is not exactly making choices with long-term planning in mind. But what does the Borg tell us about society, my precious listener? I mean, besides the obvious that everything has become a meme and even our beverages are now punchlines. It tells us that functionality and irony have merged, that Gen Z, in particular, is living in a reality where you must hydrate, caffeinate, and self-destruct, all at the same time, while maintaining a consistent aesthetic for your TikTok and Instagram story. Now, let me be clear, I'm not here to judge. I once drank absinthe in a tent in Wales, and I woke up 2 days later and I could smell colours. Now, life is for living and youth is for experimenting, with caution and electrolytes. But maybe the lesson of the Borg is this. We are all just trying to make sense of chaos, to find control in the madness of life, even if that control comes in the form of mixing Gatorade with Everclear in your mum's laundry detergent bottle. Now, for those of you in the UK, Everclear is an American alcohol that's one step away from rocket fuel. But while we're having fun with this trend, Let's keep it real for a second. A gallon of anything alcoholic is still a gallon of alcohol. The name literally includes the word blackout, which is about as subtle as a neon sign that says bad decisions ahead. My take here on this upbeat life, well, young people are actually talking about safer partying practices. They're sharing harm reduction tips, looking out for each other, and being more intentional about their choices. Now, sure, these choices might involve carrying around a gallon jug with a name like Borgzilla, but progress is progress. So if you see someone this weekend carrying a suspiciously large plastic jug with glittery stickers reading Borgingham Palace, give them a smile, maybe offer a hug, or at least a leaflet on safe drinking practices, and the number for Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm just seeing how many Borg puns I can get in. Now, if you've been assimilated into Borg culture, drop me a line at thisupbeatlife@gmail.com and send me your stories, your observations, and yes, your favourite Borg names. Now, worryingly, some of you out there are absolutely unhinged with creativity, but I'm here for it. Now, This Upbeat Life is produced by, well, me, in my pyjamas, with way too much coffee. If you enjoyed this episode, subscribe, share it with a friend, or just send me your best Borg pun. I promise to read it and fake laugh, and as always, remember, happiness is the best medicine. Okay, that wraps up the show for today. Thanks for your time and for listening. As always, I'd appreciate it if you could like, follow and subscribe to my show, This Upbeat Life, so I know I'm on the right track. And even better, leave a review and share it with your friends. Now here on This Upbeat Life, you can share your thoughts, you can ask questions and be part of our growing community. And if you've got a story for far out stuff, or you just want to get in touch with your health and wellness stories and ideas, then email me at thisupbeatlife@gmail.com and I'll read it out on the next show. You can also find me on Facebook and Instagram as This Upbeat Life and on Blue Sky as Simon JJ Green. And until next time, remember, happiness is the best medicine.